Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Working here at the WAMC Northeast Public Radio Newsroom carries a lot of responsibility. Finishing fund drive goals, holding public officials accountable, covering breaking news. We also have a lot of fun sometimes. My conversations with Mike Reese in recent years definitely fall into that category. It's been a joy to keep an eye on Springfield with Reese, a longtime comedy writer best known for his work on The Simpsons, including two seasons as co-showrunner. He still works at the show, now in its 30th season. Reese is coming to town this week for a New York State Writers Institute event to discuss his book Springfield Confidential, Jokes, Secrets, and Outright Lies from a Lifetime of Writing for The Simpsons. Reese will be at Page Hall at the University at Albany's downtown campus Friday at 7:30. I first spoke with Reese in 2016.
Sometimes we do go ultra obscure or self-referential on the show. And yeah, I love it when people pick up on that. And it was a real eye-opener in the very early days of the show because The Simpsons came onto the scene right around the time as the early internet. And we would see fan chat rooms and we go, wow, they got that joke. They get what we're throwing out there.
Actually, in preparing to speak with you, I listened back to a bunch of those, and I heard Al Jean, your partner, and then later co-showrunner, say that when you guys were on Carson, you only met him like a couple times in a few years.
That is correct. Yeah, I think I spent 90 minutes in his company in a year and a half.
Huh.
And at the end of a year and a half, he fired us, and then 2 weeks later, he tried to rehire us. And I go, wow, what did I learn in these 2 weeks?
But
that's the kind of man he was. There are people on the show who'd been fired five times.
And then you got him to be a guest star on the show.
Yeah, that was great. And he came on the show. He pretended to remember me. It was very smooth. I go, you don't know me. But he came on. He was a wonderful sport. And it was funny to see. It's literally the only thing Johnny Carson did after leaving The Tonight Show. His only appearance was on The Simpsons.
Rossi, how you holding up?
I'm kind of worried about the future. How do you deal with it?
Well, you've been on TV longer than I have. I'm sure you've saved up quite a nest egg.
Yeah. Do they still buy human hair down at the wig shop?
He came in, you know, he wasn't anywhere. He'd been off the air for at least a year, and he came in, and the Emmys had been on the night before, and he just walked into our studio and did a monologue. He did 5 minutes of original jokes about the Emmys the night before. It was a real treat.
Huh. How'd they land? I mean, you guys are a really esteemed writer's room.
Well, they were actually very funny jokes, but yeah, we would have laughed anyhow.
How did you two wind up at The Simpsons and then become, you know, the showrunner for seasons 3 and 4?
Seasons 3 and 4. Al Jean and I, we were roommates in college, and we started writing for the Harvard Lampoon together. And we were at Harvard Lampoon, and people from National Lampoon magazine read our stuff and hired us. So we went to National Lampoon, and I think if there were an International Lampoon, we would have gone off to that. But instead, we got a job offer in Hollywood. So we went to Hollywood, and we just bounced around TV for years and years. We had a different job every 10 months or so. And then it was one summer. We were on break, and someone called and said, we're starting this show called The Simpsons. Do you want to work on it? And I said, gee, you don't even know us. Why are you asking us? And they said, because everyone else has turned it down. And that was it. Nobody wanted to work on The Simpsons. It just sounded like such a dead end. You know, there hadn't been a cartoon in prime time for 30 years, you know, since The Flintstones. And it was on the Fox network, which was a brand new network, and no one knew if it would even be there from 1 year to the next. So I took the job. Al and I took the job at The Simpsons. And we didn't tell anyone what we were doing. We were so ashamed. We thought we'd hit rock bottom.
And now fast forward to 2016, you're still associated with the show?
Yes, I am. I go in there one day a week now. It's what I like at The Simpsons, we have a very big staff, and a lot of us have been there a long time, and nobody's been there longer than me. So I'm like a squatter. I'm just there. They can't get rid of me. They can't get me off their property. But everybody just works to the extent they still think they have something fresh to give. So there are people there who work 4 days a week or 3 days a week. And I have to say, after 28 years, I'm good for about one day of fresh material. So I'm thinking of cutting back to about 45 minutes a week.
Is there something the family hasn't done yet that you still have on your wish list?
That's a great question. It's the toughest thing about our job is coming up with new stories. Once someone comes in with a great story, the machine starts rolling, and we can write the jokes and see how the town will react to it. But coming up with 22 stories we haven't done already out of 615 episodes, I think, that's really hard. Plus the fact that we do two or three storylines a week. So in answer to your question, no, I have one idea. I have one idea in my back pocket if anyone ever springs it on me to do an episode about. But we're running out. You know, once a year we have The Simpsons take a vacation to some country somewhere, and we're running out of countries. They've really been everywhere.
Yeah, I think I heard you say in one of the commentaries they've even been arrested at every location at this point.
They've been arrested, and every single member of the Simpsons family has been in jail at one time. And in fact, Marge, you know, the least likely suspect, she just went to jail a second time at the end of last season. The show is slowly turning into Orange is the New Black. It's gradually becoming a prison show.
I have a couple quick specific questions, and if you're not the right person to ask, then we can just cut this out. But two specific things that recur on the show. How did Yoink start, and how did Lenny getting things in his eye start?
Yoink, I know, I think George Meyer, who, many, many Simpsons stories, the answer is George Meyer.
And
he came up with, I remember sitting there, and he pitched it. Someone grabbed something and said, Yoink. And he didn't invent it. It's from Archie Comics. I remember that was a sound effect you would see in Archie Comics a lot when someone would grab something. You'd see Yoink. So we took that one. And what was Lenny getting stuff in the eye. I don't remember that. I get the feeling, I don't remember how it started. I can sort of picture, I think it's around season 5 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
Lenny got something in his eye. The way these things usually happen is Lenny gets something in his eye, and about a year later, someone pitches, how about Lenny gets something in his eye? And when someone else will say, we did that already, and we go, let's make it a runner. That's his character. Lenny gets stuff in his eye. So we've done that. We've done that to death by now. He's really had a lot of stuff in his eye.
And does that?
There was a runner I liked. We used to turn up, which was that Homer was an expert on the Supreme Court. He was a prize idiot, but he knew everything about the history of the Supreme Court. And I think maybe we've had 3 jokes about it over the years, but not enough quite to make it a runner.
Why did you flock to animation? I mean, I know you've worked in The Simpsons and done a lot of other animated things. What is it about the medium you like?
I love it. I have to say, I love it because I don't have to work with actors. And now, mind you, we work with brilliant actors on The Simpsons, and we bring in more brilliant actors, and they're wonderful and easygoing, but we don't have to deal with them as people. You know, Homer Simpson is the greatest character in the world to write for because he's got everything a comedy writer loves. He's fat, he's stupid, he's bald, he's lazy, he's an alcoholic. In season 4, we decided, he smells too. And if this was a real person, we couldn't do that to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think of the show Roseanne. Roseanne was a show about a hippopotamus married to an elephant. And Roseanne on that show would insult everybody. And nobody would ever say, Roseanne, shut up, you fat pig. Nobody would ever allude to her weight because it was her show and she was the boss and she ran things. So you couldn't make fun of the actress. But with The Simpsons, we have free reign that, you know, we don't have to pull back with our characters. There's also, of course, just the freedom of being able to go anywhere and do anything. The Simpsons, you know, came on the air at a time where Bill Cosby was the top show on TV. And it was just people sitting on a couch every week. And it was Roseanne sitting on a couch every week. And in fact, the liveliest TV show on the air at that time was The Golden Girls. That was as energetic as TV got. So then we came on with The Simpsons. We were able to go anywhere, and it was incumbent on us to make the show move as fast as possible.
My last question for you, I rewatched Lisa Goes to Washington, one of your very famous episodes, and if I have this right, you're first as the showrunner.
That is correct.
And for people who haven't seen her, maybe don't remember, Lisa wins an essay contest, goes to Washington, and is immediately turned off by some corruption that she witnesses. I don't know what year that was, 91 or so?
Oh, 90, I'm going to say 91, yes.
And in the context of this election season, how current it felt. And I wonder if, while you guys were working on it, if you had the long-term impact in mind.
Certainly not. No. No. I mean, there are better examples of that. There's certainly, in the year 2000, we did a future episode where we wanted to see sort of this dystopian future. And somebody said, gee, the world sure went to hell after we elected Donald Trump president. So that was 16 years ago.
We're listening back to my interviews with longtime Simpsons writer and former co-showrunner Mike Reese. The second time we spoke was in 2018, upon the publication of his book, Springfield Confidential.
I end the book by talking about the one question I'd never heard for years and years, where finally a six-year-old boy asked me when I was giving a speech, why are the Simpsons yellow? And it occurred to me, I had no idea, and I went back to work, and nobody at work knew why they were yellow. And there's a very good explanation for it, but you got to read the book to find out. And it's on the last page. So, you know, pretend it's a Hebrew book and start at the back, and the question will be answered.
I have some practice with that. let me ask a six-year-old's question. Why do they have four fingers?
They have four fingers. That is just the tradition in animation, where in animation, you try and do as little as possible, because anything you draw, you have to draw literally 24,000 times. So that's why nobody in animation has a philtrum. Nobody has those lines you have under the nose and above the lip. And except for Homer Simpson, men don't have nipples in animation. You've never seen anyone with nipples. And this is something Matt Groening said. Homer Simpson has to have nipples, and they're just two dots. You know, his eyes are two dots, and so why not make his nipples two dots? But you just do as little as possible, and it hurts the show in Japan. I don't know. Japan is the biggest market on Earth where The Simpsons is not a hit, and one reason is because they have four fingers. And the explanation I've heard is that Japanese mafia members have four fingers. They cut off their pinky finger to join the Yakuza. So when you look at The Simpsons with four fingers, you're thinking Sopranos.
Huh.
And one more thing, and then I'll get off this ridiculous question, which is Disney, when they show Mickey Mouse in Japan, they animate a fifth finger onto him. They spend a lot of money just to give Mickey one more finger.
Huh. Did Mr. Sparkle play well there?
Again, Japan is the market. They just very early on looked at The Simpsons and said, we don't get it. they don't really watch it. I don't know them commenting on it at all, because that was, I think, season six, and they had bailed on us about 5 years before.
As a fan, I've heard, you know, your DVD commentaries. I've read a lot of different interviews with people involved in the show, and you touch on some of the early friction that developed between Matt Groening, who, of course, created the show, and Sam Simon, who gave it its artistic voice in the early years. How would you assign the credit, you know, because success has so many fathers in a case like this, you know, over 600 episodes and so many brilliant writers who've worked on the show. How would you split up credit for how The Simpsons became what it was?
You know, it's the kind of thing I hate to say, 30% and 40% here. I always looked at it as a troika. It was Matt Groening, who certainly created it all. And, you know, everyone probably knows who's listening to this. You know, the show started off as these one-minute cartoons on the Tracy Ullman show. And Fox has never shown these cartoons again. And it looks like, this is the one thing they're ashamed of, or the one thing they don't even want to make money off of. But you watch these cartoons, and it's all in there. The whole Simpsons family is in there. The dynamic is in there. It's got Krusty the Clown in them, and Grandpa, and Itchy and Scratchy. So Matt Groening really invented that world. But, you know, then it was a big job to expand that from 1 minute to 30 minutes. And that's where you just brought in Sam Simon, who is literally the most proficient expert at television I've ever seen. I mean, he was a guy who was running the show Taxi at age 23. He was just a genius. And, you know, he's the one that kind of amped up the world and set the tone for the show. He's the one who hired the writers and supervised the scripts. And then there was James L. Brooks, who, you know, had an impeccable career in TV and movies with Terms of Endearment and Broadcast News. And he came in and just made it something it had never been before. He never seemed to care it was animated. It was always about heart and emotion and how much depth can we bring to these people. And I think that was the thing that put The Simpsons over the top for so many people, was they'd watch the show, it was funny and crazy and irreverent, and then suddenly they'd find themselves deeply moved by the end. Something Homer would do or something Lisa would say. They were shocked to see, oh, a cartoon could move them so deeply or reflect on their lives so much. So that's what Jim Brooks brought to the show.
Were you just gonna leave just like that?
Oh, I'm sorry, Lisa. It's the life of the substitute teacher. He's a fraud. Today he might be wearing gym shorts. Tomorrow he's speaking French or pretending to know how to run a bandsaw or God knows what.
You can't go. You're the best teacher I'll ever have.
Oh, that's not true. Other teachers will come along.
Oh, please.
No, I can't lie to you. I am the best. But, you know, they need me over in the projects of Capital City.
But I need you too.
You mentioned Al Jean's math genius, and there have been a lot of really smart math people and scientists who've worked on the show. Is there, I don't want to use the term formula, but I can't think of a better word. Is there something that makes a good script or a good Simpsons story, you know, A happens here, B happens there, that you can recognize on the page?
Here's the thing. This is the difference between me and a journalist, is I observe the facts, and the book I'm selling here is full of facts, but it's not full of the why, and the why is where it gets you in trouble. And it's an amazing fact that half the Simpsons writers come from a math and science background. I got into Harvard based on my math ability, and then I never went near it again. So we all have a deep background in math science. We have a bunch of engineers and PhDs and science on the show. But the why of it, I go, I don't know. It just happened. It's like we have... The Simpsons has more writers from Connecticut than anywhere else. And I go, well, that's an interesting fact. But anytime you might look at why is that, you go, you're just getting into trouble. You have a good chance of being really wrong.
Huh. Okay, let me give you another why then, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I'm quoting Steamed Hams once a week. We're in Albany, New York. You know, the field trip to Albany is off. I was voted... most handsome boy in Albany, New York. What's with all the upstate New York references over the years?
I don't know. It sounds kind of funny, so we keep going there. It's always interesting in that we have a writer from Utica, but he's not the guy writing these jokes. It's the same thing. We make a lot of fun of Harvard in the show, but the Harvard jokes never come from the Harvard writers. They come from somebody else. So, you know, you probably even stay away from the things you're closest to when you write the show because you think, oh, they may be too personal. They may be just funny to me. And the other thing I just have to say is there are now, I think, 300 hours plus of Simpsons episodes. So we've talked about everything a lot. And I was at some college. I forget which one it was. Valparaiso College. And I always hear, why do you make so many jokes about Valparaiso on the show? There's a rumor that all your writers went to Valparaiso and all the characters are named after Valparaiso professors. And it's like, yes, you have a professor comic book guy here at the show, here at the school. And the answer is, no, we probably made two jokes about Valparaiso in 30 years. But, you know, that's a lot to people. So I think everything's been mentioned on the show a couple of times.
And anyway, we know that the majority of the writers went to Gudger College. That brings me to my next question, which you write in the book about how Al Jean had this kind of encyclopedic memory of a joke that had come up, you know, 20 years after it was first used, and he could name the episode and said, we can't do that again. My question is, what does the show Bible actually look like in terms of characters and situations and jokes? Is there just like a spreadsheet, or is it all in people's heads? How's it work?
There is no Bible at all. We've never had a Bible. You know, we've never even think ahead on the show. There's so many funny fan theories and critical theories that we plan the show out way in advance, and we have an overall arc to things, and we have an agenda, and we literally make it up a joke at a time. And there's never been an arc or a guideline to any of the show. But yes, Al Jean, one reason he runs the show and has run the show for 20 years is he just remembers every single joke. I'll tell the story. It's from the book that you're alluding to, where we're in the old folks' home, and Grandpa says, "I want to watch TV." And someone says, "Who died and made you boss?" And he goes, "Fred." And he points to Fred, who's dead on the ground holding the TV remote. And everybody laughed, but Al said, "I think we did that joke before." And he tells the writer's assistant, "Pull up script 7F17. He doesn't say pull up the one where Grandpa gets a boat or something. He says, "Pull up the 7th season, 17th episode." And he's looking at the script, page 30, 31, 32. There's the same joke 23 years ago. And if I were Al, I would have done a victory lap. I am the genius. I am the master of mankind. But he just goes, "Maybe we should keep pitching." Yeah, we rely on Al a lot. The other thing is we go to the fan websites. The fans are very good about keeping us apprised and keeping track of everything, but we really don't.
It was interesting for me to learn just how much revision goes into a script or a joke, and people have to be very small d democratic about the process, that it can't be fighting for jokes all the time, because you say it has to be funny in three separate readings, right?
That is correct. We when somebody writes a script for The Simpsons, they'll do their very best job, and we have great writers, but then it goes to the Lions. Then it's 10 people will sit around a table with the script, and we'll just go, first line, anyone got anything better? And everyone throws out jokes till something makes everyone laugh. And if it gets a laugh, it goes in the script. And then we go, line 2, line 3. We work our way through the script. And when we're done with it, we send it to another room full of writers, and they go through it from top to bottom. And so by the time a show hits the air, we've done 8 complete rewrites. And if you wrote the greatest Simpsons script in history, by the time it hits the air, 80% of your material has been thrown out, and very often 100% has been changed. And that's just the process. And the only way really to get fired at The Simpsons is if you slow the machine down. If you go, "Oh no, you're hurting it," or "Please, you got to give this joke a try." We don't have time for that. And everyone just operates on faith that in the end, it'll come out pretty good.
You're still working there about one day a week now. I'm curious how much you guys pay attention to doing fan service, because at this point in the series, you know, like people like me, I'm 32. It's been my favorite show for my entire life.
It's been on your whole life.
Yeah. And I notice things that you put in there that are there for people like me.
Yeah, we try to, you know, I have to say a lot of it comes out of desperation. You know, we need 100 jokes a week, and sometimes the jokes are just a tip of the hat. Here's something we did before, and let's do it again. Or here's, if we need something in the background, well, let's throw in an obscure detail. I remember it all came back to, again, Sam Simon in the very early days of the show. We did an episode, I'm sure you'll remember, that ended with Mr. Burns giving the family a giant Olmec Indian head. You know, it was like this 3-ton sculpture. And in any other TV show, they would have had it that week, and then you would have never seen it again. But Sam Simon said, "Let's put it in the basement of the house, and just, we won't remark on it, but anytime we're in the basement, let's just see that in a corner of the shot." And it was that idea of having some sort of continuity with our little jokes was something brand new. I'd never seen that on TV, but we do it, and it's almost hard not to be kind of paralyzed and just do a bunch of callbacks to other jokes you've done before.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite character either to watch or to write for?
The character I write the most for, at least in the early days, was Kent Brockman. He's not the funniest character, but you know, everything he says on the news is funny. And I would write a lot of those. Those were just very pure jokes. And, one of my favorite ones was, he said, coming up next, the Munchkins from The Wizard of Oz, where are they now? And then you just cut to a shot of a cemetery. So I would write those jokes. They're just pure jokes. The character that's everybody loves the right for is obviously Homer. I mean, he's a man who sort of took over the show and ran away with it because he's just a comedy writer's dream. He has every single thing wrong with you that you can have, every comedy trope. He's fat, he's bald, he's stupid, he's lazy, he's angry. In season 4, we did a joke where Homer walks into a pet shop and the pet shop owner goes, "What is that horrible smell?" And one of the writers remarked, "Oh, I guess Homer smells now, too."
When the future is tenuous, as it has been more often in the last few years than for the first, you know, say 20, are you at peace with the possibility that it may end, or what do you feel?
I'm personally at peace, partly because you may know my story, which is I live in New York and I work every Wednesday in L.A.
So that's a lot of time on the plane.
That is a lot. I have a 6,000-mile commute to work every single week. And a great week is a week where I spend less than 24 hours in L.A. because those are my two conditions. I love my job and I hate Los Angeles. So, yeah, I think the day it finally ends is the day I go, what was I crazy doing that all the time? But of course, we know the current situation in TV. The day The Simpsons goes off is the day they start planning first the bad Broadway musical version of The Simpsons and then the bad reboot of The Simpsons. And I'm hoping that'll run for a while because, you know, Homer can't tweet racist tweets or anything like that. So I think it's going to just, in some form or another, go and go and go forever.
Mike Reese is the author of Springfield Confidential, Jokes, Secrets, and Outright Lies from a Lifetime Writing for The Simpsons. And I love the book. I love having a chance to talk with you again, Mike. Thanks for all of your work.
Oh, thank you.
Longtime Simpsons writer Mike Reese will be at Page Hall at the University at Albany's downtown campus Friday at 7:30. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.